Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, greetings from Florida's Space Coast. It's time to strap yourself in, close and lock your visors, and initiate O2 flow as we launch the January 30th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, I'm Jim Behnke, and for the next hour, we are going to be talking about our nation's space program again, past, present, and future. Well, as such as we're able to determine the future of our space program right now. But we're going to spend most of our time today talking about the next space shuttle mission and its cargo. And, of course, as always, you are welcome to join us and share your questions, comments about anything having to do with our space program. Just dial 768-1240. If you're an AT&T wireless customer along Florida's Space Coast, you just punch in star 1240 on your cell phone, and you'll reach us in the studio with a free phone call. And if you happen to be listening live online right now to our stream at WMMBAM.com, you can call us from anywhere in the world at 321-768-1240. Or if you prefer, just send us an email to spacetalking@AOL.com. And by the way, today, if you are thinking about calling in, it is a good day to do so, as I happen to have a couple of books with me that were written by some of our recent guests, and I sure would like to find a home for them. Enough said. Well, look, this is an emotional time of year for me, and I think for many in the space community. History has given us the unwelcome gift of collecting within days of each other the three major disasters in which we lost the lives of so many astronauts. Of course, we're talking about the fire of Apollo 1 at Launch Complex 34. It happened on January 27th, 1967. Challenger was ripped apart in our skies on January 28th, 1986. And, of course, Columbia left our skies empty, filling the skies over Texas with debris during its reentry on February 1st, 2003. 17 astronauts, of course, perished in that trio of tragedies. Now, I remember the news coverage of the Apollo 1 fire, although I was really too young to understand or appreciate what had happened as a child in Minnesota in January in 1967. I had more pressing things to worry about, like staying warm, for example. But when Challenger happened, I was at the Kennedy Space Center press site, also trying to stay warm on that cold day, covering the launch for the Avion, my school newspaper at Embry-Riddle in Daytona Beach. And as it was for so many others, Challenger, of course, was a shock and a traumatic experience that still bothers me today. The morning we lost Columbia, I was working for space.com and was in my office at Port Canaveral waiting for those sonic booms. My landing story was all set to go. All I needed at the time was for the wheels stop quote from Rick Husband, and then I would push a button and the story would go online. And, of course, that didn't happen. And of the many memories I have of that day, the one that stands out, of course, is the emptiness I felt in the sky, among my friends, and, of course, in my heart. So yesterday, NASA had its official day of remembrance for these three crews. Of course, words were said. Flowers were laid at monuments and tombstones around the nation, and prayers were offered. And in our nation's capital at the same time, our president was getting ready to officially release his wishes, anyway, for a federal budget in 2011 that, by all accounts, will have more of a profound and historic impact on the future direction of NASA than any of the three disasters that were remembered on Friday. You know, and I'm telling you, folks, from what I've been reading and hearing during the past couple of days, you know, I wonder whether this time of year will be remembered for a fourth disaster in space, as represented by President Obama's budget and his direction for NASA. Now, to be fair, we don't know all the details for sure, bits and pieces have been coming out in the media and among sources and rumors in the hallways. I don't want to waste too much emotion on any of this just yet. But from what we're hearing so far, I'll just share that I'm bothered by talk of not going back to the moon. Ever since the Vision for Space Exploration was announced in 2004, I have been telling kids everywhere I meet that finally, at last, I can promise them that they are going to be able to grow up and either walk on Mars or walk on the moon. And now I'm not so sure that we're going to be able to follow through on that promise. We'll see. Despite all the negative things that are said about the Ares 1 rocket, I'm still not convinced it's the lemon that so many say it is. I'm bothered by how expensive it is to operate and how expensive it is to develop. I was always a little surprised by that. And maybe we don't have the full accounting and the straight story. But I got to believe that rocket, it can do the job and should be given a chance. I'm concerned that stopping everything right now and designing something new or relying on someone else to do that job is only going to put us further behind. Not only in terms of the schedule, but in terms of our leadership around the world. So there's a lot to be said about perhaps continuing on with this rocket and still giving others a chance to do the job. You know, I think, we're not going to go back to the moon, but then if there is this talk about this flexible path, on the other hand, if we're going to develop a space transportation infrastructure in orbit that allows us to get into and out of low Earth orbit from the ground up, and from low Earth orbit up to higher orbits or to cislunar space or to deep space or the Lagrangian points, if you know what those are. Anything to operate in deep space beyond low Earth orbit, you know, possibly land on the Martian moons instead of going directly to the Martian surface. You know, all that is interesting. That's exploration. It doesn't have to be the moon or nothing. It doesn't have to be the Mars or nothing. It can be a lot of other things. And if we can enable some infrastructure and some technology to go do these things, then I think that's good. You know, and people joke about asteroids coming to hit the Earth and that we ought to do a better job of identifying that. Well, we do need to do a better job and spend more money identifying potential risks. But I'm not willing to take my chances on that. We have the technology to do something. And if we can enable a space program that can get us to and from low Earth orbit and around space in such a way that we can make a difference in that way, then that's a pretty darn practical way of spending our money. At the same time, if we can turn some of this stuff over to private interest, to the commercial folks, whoever they are, whether they're Elon Musk and SpaceX, or frankly, whether they're ATK and developing the Ares 1, continuing to develop it as a commercial vehicle, then I think we ought to give them a chance to do that. And I think that maybe even that's a particularly good role for government to take, that government enables these things to happen without actually operating it itself. Is it safe? We'll see. We'll see. I think it can be safe. I think that they know what they're doing. I think that you've got smart people who have worked for NASA and take that expertise elsewhere. I think that no commercial operator is going to willingly take too much of a risk to go fly. I get a big kick out of these people who say, well, it's big money, and they just want to make money. They just want to make profit, and they're not going to care about safety. Well, if our airlines operated that way, we wouldn't have a robust airline system today that is as safe as it is. And I got to believe in the very specific case of SpaceX and having their astronauts on their team, they're not going to let something happen if they don't want to. Well, we're going to find out soon enough. Monday is budget day. The president will lay his cards on the table and we'll finally see what kind of hand we're dealt, and we'll certainly talk about it in the future. Well, when we return from this break, we're going to talk to two of the key Kennedy Space Center managers responsible for preparing Shuttle Endeavour's cargo for launch next weekend. Joe Dely and Dave Cormick joins us in a moment on Space Talk, which is brought to you by United Space Alliance. Stand by. I'm Jim Behnke, and you're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
Well, and welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to join me today with your questions or comments, or send email to spacetalking@aol.com. Next Sunday morning, a week from tomorrow, if all goes well, no, we're not going to talk about the Super Bowl yet, Space Shuttle Endeavour is scheduled to begin a 13-day mission to the International Space Station. Launch is set for 4:39 a.m. Eastern Time. And by the way, as of now, as we've been saying, if every other launch holds to the current schedule and the space station doesn't radically change its orbit, this is going to be the last night launch of the shuttle program. So if you wanted to see the sky light up by a space shuttle, this is your last chance right now, next week. Tucked inside Endeavour's cargo bay is the final major piece of hardware contributed by the United States that will be attached to the space station. It's called the Tranquility Node. And the two gentlemen in charge of preparing that hardware for launch at the Kennedy Space Center joins us in our studio today. Joe Dely is with NASA, is the STS-129 payload manager. His contractor counterpart is Dave Cormick, who is the Boeing flight manager for this mission. And Joe, Dave, welcome aboard, and thanks for being with us on Space Talk. Give us a shout.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's an honor to be here, Jim.
Okay, that's Joe and Dave.
It's good to be here.
There you go. We know the voices now, okay? Joe, let's start with you, of course. First of all, I want both of you, if you would, just briefly tell us a little bit about yourselves. You know, how did you wind up working at KSC? Kind of what's your background, your love of space?
Well, sure. Back in high school, I was always interested in aviation, and I elected to go to Embry-Riddle.
Yay.
There you go. Aeronautical University, Daytona Beach, and got my first engineer degree from Embry-Riddle, and went through the four-year Air Force ROTC program, and I spent 5 years in the military, and then after that, decided to come work for NASA and pursue my engineering degree.
And had you been following the shuttle program? It was just starting as you were graduating, of course.
Yes, it was fascinating.
That's great. Dave, how about you?
Well, I'm a graduate of Florida State University, and I was an Air Force brat, so I grew up always wanting to be a pilot, and like Joe, I went through ROTC. I got to go to Air Force pilot training and spent a career in the Air Force as a pilot before I got out and went to work for Boeing. But I joked that I flew one of the slowest airplanes in the Air Force inventory, the C-7 Caribou. I flew that over in Vietnam, and I flew tankers, KC-135s, for a while, and then I got to fly the FB-111, which was one of the fastest aircraft,
yeah,
and that was a blast.
Yeah, I'll bet that was. Yeah. When was the last time you were in a big jet like that?
My last flight in the 111 was in 91, and then in tankers, I last flew those Well, I was over in Desert Storm, and probably a year after that was my last flight in an aircraft as a pilot.
Are you current still?
No, I'm not.
No. That's the one thing I need to do yet is get my pilot's license. I haven't been able to get that far. I can land anything on Microsoft Flight Simulator. You know, you can put me in any cockpit on any aircraft, and I can land it. Just shift L, and it automatically just takes you right in. Sweeter. Joe, talk about the payload a little bit. Tell us about the node. This is the third such beast to fly up to the space station. Tell us what's new and exciting.
Oh, it's fantastic. Like you said, it's the third node to fly. And boy, I worked node one and node two many years ago. And what's so unique about the node three, it's going to expand the living and working volume on the space station.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take science racks and crew quarter racks and various racks to support six crew capability, move them into the node. That opens up other parts of space station for future racks, and just expand the working volume. It's tremendous.
Now, in the sort of the tinker toy-like way the station is put together, the previous nodes really were building blocks. This is more or less just going to be kind of attached on the top I don't want to say storage space, but...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you look up the word node, it does mean center of something. And so node one and node two were kind of like the center space station. And node three would be on the outside, and it will be used to, like I said, enhance the working volume and living volume of space station. So it's going to be another lab up there.
And how... How complicated is this thing? I mean, first of all, tell us about who built it, how it was built, kind of what its history was in coming here.
That's a good question. It's a very, I think it's probably one of the most complicated payloads I've worked on for a long time. It was actually built by our ESA, our European friends, ESA, European Space Agency, and also Thales, Linea Space Agency.
Mm.
And they worked together as a team. We went over there and supported them as required. And they spent many years building Node 3. And then once it came to Kennedy Space Center, we worked together as a team and finished integration and testing of it. But if you think about it, you have to have – it's going to be an active module that's permanently attached to space station. So you have to have water and electricity, and you have to have all the engineering devices to support life on space station. So it's a very complicated module, but we're very proud of it with our tying friends.
Yeah, and on the end of the node is the cupola. And is the, I hope I say that right. I think I always goof it up every time I say it.
That's right.
The window on the world, basically, right?
Exactly. So the cupola is going to have seven windows, and once the once Node 3 is on space station, they'll move the cupola from the end of the node and put it on the bottom. It's kind of a twofold purpose. You get great views of space, and there's various cameras and experiments that we use, and we can take advantage of the windows and look around space, also looking down at the Earth. At the same time, the crew being there and will give them the advantage of working with the robotic arm on station as payloads get moved around. It shows it's a fantastic, again, it's a fantastic piece of equipment that our European and Italian friends built.
Now, I remember in the last few times I've been over to the space station processing facility I remember it sitting there forever. You know, it just seems like it's been sitting in the back corner, and it's kind of neat that, you know, like you basically take it out, dust it off, and send it on its way. But I remember the windows on the side. I remember those kind of weird windows. If anyone's ever seen any of the old science fiction or the old Disney animations of what it might be like to work in space, there's always this one shot of this astronaut up in sort of this work area surrounded by these windows so he can have a 360-degree view of the planet and of what's going on outside. And, of course, that's what we're talking about here. But I don't remember, does it have an overhead window too? Is it just this on the side?
Yes, it has the six side windows, and
okay.
there's one overhead too. And that overhead one would be perfect to open up and look down directly at the Earth.
And that's where it's eventually going to be pointed, is down.
Yes, that is correct.
Wow, that's going to be great. You would stick a camera in there and just let it go.
Oh, definitely. Exactly.
It would be a lot of fun. Now, I remember going back to the first node. Of course, the very first Node 1 was the first American piece brought up, and Bob Caban, our current KSC director, was the commander of that mission. And I remember there standing there talking with him about it, and when there was the big show-and-tell day, and I remember looking at that thing and thinking how big it was, you know, and it was like this simple cylinder with these cuts in the side, these holes, one on either end, and then four connecting pieces. And I remember how big the volume was. I was thinking, you know, we've been so limited to just the mid-deck of the shuttle and going back to the Apollo and Mercury capsules that was so cramped. And now, not since Skylab, would we have so much volume. I remember telling Mr. Caban about this, and he was agreeing with it, of course. And yet now the node is just this dinky little part, you know, the space station. But I marveled at the construction of it. And Dave, I'm going to ask you real quick. You know, I mean, I know that that the Italians built it, but now as you're the kind of contractor for some of this stuff, you know, how are you involved in this process?
Okay, that's a good question. Yeah, Node got over here in May of last year, and Boeing does the payload processing services, or we call it host role services, supporting NASA, and with TASI. Our Italian friends as the lead to process everything, we helped them. We did the lifting of the module. We helped them set up all the equipment they needed to set up to do testing. We made arrangements for them, coordinating with off-site agencies when they did the testing on the node. We had people from JSC and from Huntsville, and we coordinated all that effort, helped them get their ground support equipment together in order to do all of that testing. And so they basically did all of their testing and the final assembly from the period of May till about the 20th of November.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that time, they turned the module over to NASA, and Boeing ended up loading the cargo. There are integrated storage platforms inside the node We place the crew transfer bags or the cargo transfer bags inside the node, did all of that packing. We ended up closing the hatch and doing the pressure checks and things like that. So that's basically what we do with most of the payloads out there is if there's lifting involved or assembly efforts, and in this case, the final assembly efforts, we got involved in the final assembly to get that thing ready to go out to the launch pad.
Yeah, and Dave, just with about 20 seconds left to answer this, just like in shuttle, you know, I guess NASA does the oversight and the USA does the hands-on bolt turning. Is that a similar relationship out there with you and Boeing and NASA?
Yes, it is, right. We work, we support NASA. We have quality inspectors. NASA has air quality inspectors watching what we do. So, yeah, it's a very similar arrangement.
Well, that's great. Okay. Well, look, we're at the bottom of the hour here. It's time to stop our clock for the five-minute built-in hold. And we're going to take this chance to get up, caught up on our news and weather and sports. We'll pick up our conversation with Joe and Dave right after this short break. Space Talk is brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. I'm Jim Behnke. You're listening to WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
And welcome back to this second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance, with a reminder that you can give us a call at 321-768-1240 or star 1240 for the AT&T wireless customers along the Space Coast. Once again, you can send us email to spacetalking@aol.com. And during the week, we invite you to follow us on Twitter. Our username is spacetalking. And again, reminding you that today's program can be heard live online right now, as it is every week at this time, live streaming audio at WMMBAM.com. Today's show is being recorded and will be available as a podcast throughout the week. Again, go to the WMMB homepage, WMMBAM.com. Before we continue with Joe from NASA and Dave from Boeing, just to remind you again that Space Shuttle Endeavour is scheduled for launch next Sunday morning at 4:39 a.m. on Super Bowl Sunday. And looks like the crew for this mission, including another Embry-Riddle graduate, the pilot, Terry Virts, will be here Tuesday night about 10:30. So look forward to the aircraft in the sky about them. And the countdown officially picking up for what could be the last night launch of the Space Shuttle program beginning Thursday morning at 2 a.m. So, again, this 13-day mission of the International Space Station carrying the Tranquility node up to the International Space Station. And, again, two of the managers that are responsible for preparing that cargo or leading the team to prepare that cargo for flight is with us, Joe Dely from NASA, Dave Cormick from Boeing. And Joe, let's talk about some of the fun stuff behind this. The node named Tranquility, not necessarily the name that some people would have liked to have it had. Let's talk about that story from a few months ago.
Sure. Well, we all know Tranquility was the landing site of the Apollo 11 back in 69, but NASA had a contest a while back and to name the node 3, and they had some there's some unique responses out there, but I think
the most unique.
Most unique. I think our friend Mr. Colbert seemed to be leading the way.
That's right. So Steve Colbert, the host of, and I'm going to blank out. My kids are going to yell at me. His show on Comedy Central at night. He does the Colbert Report.
Yes,
right? Isn't that
yes,
what it is?
That's correct.
Do we have an eagle sound, Aaron, or screeching in the background at this point? The Colbert Report.
That's
yeah.
It. That's
all right. Thanks. Good job. He says NASA's doing this contest, and by gosh, you know, I want to be a part of this. And actually, what's interesting about Colbert is he's been a big supporter of the space program. He's given this program a lot of good publicity in his good-natured ribbing kind of a way, and so he says to his audience, "Hey, write me in." And what happened?
Well, I think he won. I think he won, and it was funny. It was fantastic.
It was great. He handled it pretty well, didn't he?
He's a big supporter of NASA, and we just enjoy his show.
So the time comes, and they go ahead. NASA headquarters makes the appropriate decision Names of Tranquility. You guys had nothing to do with it, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Way above your pay grade, as they like to say.
That's right.
Tranquility gets named, and they give Colbert the Consolation Prize, which was the treadmill.
The T2 treadmill, that's right.
Which went up when? About a flight or two ago, I think?
Yeah, that was back on 17A. And I remember when NASA was on a show, when the astronauts came down on a show and announced that he was going to, the T2 was going to be named after him. So up on space, everybody's going to be riding the Colbert, the T2 treadmill.
And does it wind up in the Tranquility Node at some point? I don't think it's obviously not there now because the node's not up there.
Yeah, exactly. Eventually, it will wind up in the Node 3.
Wow, that's great. So that's pretty much it for the chance to name anything at this point.
I think so.
There's not like the space talk window that we could arrange or anything like that.
Well, we could look at that.
We could
maybe
talk about that. Yeah. And I'll write a memo. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's cool. Well, and of course, you know, this is a complicated, important piece of machinery. It's obviously very expensive. I don't know what the number is. I don't know what the official number is. But I'm curious. You've processed so much stuff. You know, the shuttle. I want to ask the question from this perspective. The shuttle, the orbiter itself. It's the same orbiter time after time after time. Very specific piece of hardware. I don't want to say routine, but, you know, it's the same procedure over and over again with the nuances between the orbiter. When you guys face this stuff in the space station processing facility, I mean, everything's got to be different. I mean, every piece of hardware is new and unique. And even though this is the third node, I would imagine it's different enough from the other two that, again, it presented you with a bunch of unique challenges. So tell us kind of generically, how do you get a piece of hardware ready to go to the space station, and then what was kind of unique about this one that caught your eye or is worth noting?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, you can back up many years and people who are interested in flying items on the space shuttle, the space station. We have universities, we have research folks, pharmaceutical companies, material companies. We have requirements that NASA has put out in the general public if they want to build something to meet NASA's requirements. So there's all sorts of avenues to get to fly things on the space shuttle for NASA. And then once they meet those requirements, which again can take a few years, and then towards the end, you know, NASA will partner with the customer and we'll take a look at, okay, this is what we need to help each other out. So when this thing does arrive at Kennedy Space Center, we can work as a team to process this in the space station processing facility. We'll look at design. We'll take a look at integration, testing requirements. We want to make sure that this experiment or this module works 110% before we even think of going near the shuttle. So it's a teamwork, and every mission is different at the SSPF, but we have a lot of skilled and dedicated workers, and it just seems to work out every time.
So while each thing is different, is there a standard flow? You dust it, you paint it, you plug it in, you pressurize it, you dunk it in water. I mean, what's involved?
Yeah, I mean, basically, I can say, okay, it shows up, we inspect it, we do some integration, we test it, we fix it if it has to be, and then we'll test it again, and then we'll clean up again and make sure it works with the orbiter, and then we'll head on to the pad. So at a high level, that's kind of the general outline, but every piece of equipment, every element is unique in itself. So how you fill in that outline is very different for each mission.
Now, as we got closer toward making the decision on the launch date and our attention really turned toward Endeavour, there was some news about some coolant lines. Was it on the node itself? Were they test lines? I mean, what happened with all that?
Well, a while back, the Node 3 had to be relocated from the nadir side of Node 1 to the port side of Node 1, and this was to avoid interferences with future elements. So everything was going fine, and the hoses were being built, and they were on track to be delivered. And when they were going through the testing process, they had some issues. You know, when you build things to go into space, it's not like you can go to Home Depot and buy some hoses.
Right.
I mean, the space environment is very, very unforgiving. Okay, so when you build a hose or an ammonia line or a water line, there's various requirements that you have to adhere to. And during its testing process, there were some problems, and NASA had to go out and say, okay, guys, we know we're having some issues with these hoses. Let's get together as a team, which we did. We worked with the customers and various NASA centers. We redesigned it, rebuilt it, and they will be here to support this mission. So good work by all.
It was good work. So let me kind of parse that a little bit. Mm-hmm. So the node was going to go in a certain place on the space station. you decided for whatever reason it was going to move to a different side of the port up there, face a different direction, for permanent, or was this a temporary spot eventually?
Yeah, it's going to be a permanent part, and then once we moved the location from the one side of node 1 to the other side of node 1.
You didn't have enough hose.
The hoses had to be a little bit longer because they wouldn't reach on. And these are installed EVA, which is outside, so that just enhances the requirements, what we have to adhere to.
Okay, that's the part that I think I was making trouble connecting. So by moving the node, you need a longer hose. So you basically need to either bring up an extension or use longer hoses altogether.
Exactly.
And it was these new hoses that came in and basically didn't pass the pressurization test.
That's correct.
They burst.
Yeah, they had some problems.
Was this a messy problem in the space station processing facility? We have red fluid going all over the place.
No. This was done outside of Kennedy Space Center before they came here, but they worked together. They redesigned the hoses. They rebuilt them, and everything looks good.
And their coolant lines, and I think I want to take a moment and talk about that because everyone thinks and knows that space is so cold. Yet, you know, the heaters heat up the structure, the air, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, of course, in zero gravity, microgravity, that heat doesn't rise. It just sort of sits and keeps building like a layer of insulation in your clothing, you know, and you get warmer and warmer and warmer.
Yes.
You got to have something to carry this heat away.
Yes.
So these coolant lines are carrying alcohol?
Ammonia.
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 From a tank and circulating through the, like a circulatory system.
Exactly.
And taking that heat away. So obviously very key. And I know that for a while they were talking about maybe launching without the hoses and powering down the Tranquility node.
Yeah, there were some options about maybe letting it sit dormant for a while, or looking at different angles, the sun versus the shade. But like you mentioned earlier, Jim, we have various components on space station. They do generate heat. Ammonia is a very efficient, actually cheaper way to cool items. It's like your radiator in your car. You run the ammonia through, it cools everything off. You bring that back outside to the radiators. You dissipate the heat, and you come back in again. So it's a closed loop system.
Okay, and Joe, with about a minute left before our next break, tell us about, actually about 30 seconds here if you can, give us a quick sense of what they're going to do on orbit with this thing, and what are you guys doing back at KSC? And if we have to stop and hold it for later, we will, but talk about the assembly sequence.
No, that's a good question. So basically, we'll support launch operations. Once it gets on orbit, we will be working down at Johnson Space Center. We'll fly our key members down to JSC. We'll be supporting crew operations. We'll be supporting if there's any problems, and we'll follow the crew step by step, and we're there to help them integrate it, to test it, and just be one big team.
So essentially, this comes out of the cargo bay by the robot arm, gets put on the port, wherever it's going, and then the crew goes out and does the attachments outside. We power it up, and away you go.
Right. There's various electrical components, fluid components that have to be hooked up. And same thing with the inside, and we'll be supporting them.
Okay, good. Hey, when we return from this final break, we're going to have some final thoughts from our guests and talk about our plans for next week's Space Talk. We'll be right back on WMMB.
This is Space Talk with Jim Behnke.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. And Joe and Dave, Joe from NASA, Dave from Boeing, the managers for the cargo Tranquility node flying on Endeavour Sunday morning, 4:39 a.m. Four flights are left after this one, the shuttle program, kind of a bittersweet year. I know you guys are still real busy, but things are winding down, and I imagine the space station processing facility is looking emptier by the moment. Joe, let's start with you. What's going to happen here in the next year? What do you got left to do? And really, what do you foresee happening afterwards, professionally and personally?
Well, this is going to be a very, very busy year for us. You know, we're completing the node. We're also working 19A, which is going to be another logistics module to go up and carry provisions back and forth. We're going to have two missions that will fly up decks, and on the decks they'll have various on-orbit replacement units to help, like you may bring up a nitrogen tank, ammonia tank, to replenish what's up there, bring the new up, bring the old back. We're going to have what they call AMS, which is the Alpha Magnetic Spectrum.
Right.
And that's basically a very complicated payload that's being worked on by 13 different countries right now to take a look at deep space and take a look at various elements that are out in space. And then we're hoping to fly maybe another logistics module, and you know, we'll see what happens. You know, NASA, we're here to serve the American people, and we're going to do as we're told, and we're going to make the best of it, and we're all going to benefit from it.
Yeah, and I know. And well, David, let's talk a little bit too about the future. You know, Boeing, you're going to continue to support, obviously. You know, lots more hardware to deal with, and then what? Do we know?
Right, luckily, I get to work with Joe on some of these elements that are yet to go, like the AMS. And Boeing will continue to support NASA and spaceflight, you know, whatever that happens to be. We also have a contingent out there that will continue to process hardware that will go on HTV. It's a logistics module that the Japanese...
Right.
So we'll continue to process space hardware for that, and you know, we'll just look for any opportunities that we have to, you know, continue to support spaceflight, human spaceflight.
That's great. And Joe, you know, we're going to give you a little harder question because you're the NASA guy. But you know, again, any thoughts yet? Any direction as to what's going to happen to the space station processing facility once assembly is complete? We know, we said earlier, the future's up in the air. It could go any way, but do you have any direction right now to pursue?
Well, I think, Jim, you know, we're taking a look at what the future holds. I think right now we're all kind of sitting there on the line just looking what's out there and what the president wants, and we have a great team at Kennedy Space Center with great facilities, and you know, we'll support, you know, whatever's in the future. It's hard for me to sit there and say we're going to be doing this when it seems like every other day things change. So we'll see what happens next week.
Do you see evidence that that things are winding down? I mean, is the floor really emptying?
Right now we are so busy. Okay, yeah, it was sad. It was kind of a bittersweet to see the node leave.
Right.
But we still have, you know, four or five more missions left. We're busy. I think this year you'll see the SSPF start to come down a little bit. And we'll see what the future holds.
Yeah, I remember after Columbia, of course, and we had the downtime, and I was in the SPIF, the Space Station Processing Facility, and was impressed by the fact that you guys were using every square inch of floor space you could possibly find to hold hardware, because everything obviously was backed up, and in my head, I just picture it getting emptier and emptier. But I guess really that thing can look still pretty full even right now. It's just that you don't have everything in every nook and cranny. You still got all the work bays full. You still got a lot of people on the floor.
Yes, we still have the three pressurized logistics modules. We're actually doing various tasks in all three. We have the two decks here, plus there's another deck that's on site. So that's three decks. We'll be receiving AMS here in a few months. So it's still pretty crowded down there.
Now, by the way, a couple of thoughts to mind. You mentioned, has there been any further discussion? I remember reading something, I think the guys on spaceflightnow.com did a story about possibly putting a node up, one of the logistics modules up on the last flight and keeping it up there.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. One of the very last missions is going to be called the PMM. It's going to be the permanent logistics module. And we're working with our Italian friends. We're going to re-outfit it, kind of beef it up a little bit. And that is going to be – we're going to bring up a bunch of storage items in that, and we're going to leave that attached to the space station.
Really? That's cool.
And it's going to be used mainly for storage. You know,
right.
It's like as your house grows, you need a little more closet space.
That's going to be so important.
Yes, exactly. Because it's a mess up there right now, and they really need the working volume.
Well, and which module is it? Do you remember? Or is it planned?
FM3.
Which one by name?
David, I forget what FM3 is. Do you remember?
I do not remember the name of it. I'm sorry.
It's either Michelangelo, Leonardo, right?
It's Raffaello.
Raffaello. Leonardo, Raffaello, Michelangelo. Is it Michelangelo? Which one is it? Leonardo, Raffaello, and who's the third one? We're looking at our help in the peanut gallery over here. Donatello.
Donatello. There you go.
So last question. Please tell me.
Okay.
Because no one's ever confirmed this. This is your last chance to make news. No one's actually confirmed that the three nodes were actually named not for famous Italian people, but for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Joe, make history right now. Tell us it happened for real.
Well, it's kind of funny because when my kids were growing up, they just loved the Ninja Turtles. And when they had the contest to name them, you got the three famous Italian artists and,
right.
and famous people, and then you have the Ninja Turtles. So you know what? I'm gonna let our public decide on which one that is.
Yeah, there's a nice dodge. Someone's been treating him right in public affairs. That's great. Well, and I'm convinced his name for the turtles, and I love the fact that you know that there's the astronaut turtles came out way back when, and I'm convinced one of them's gonna fly up on station one day and whatnot. So anyway, hey Joe, Dave, thank you for being on the air with us today, and thanks for talking about Tranquility. Good luck with the mission. Good luck with your preparations for the rest of the year. We might have you back and talk some more later in the year.
We'd love to. Thank you.
And well, let's all cross our fingers for a bright future for all of us, okay?
It was a pleasure.
Good. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Joe. Well, let's wrap up and talk real quick about next weekend. Despite the fact that my Minnesota Vikings did not make it to the Super Bowl, it is still shaping up to be a fun weekend. And then let's review again. Sunday morning, we hope to see the launch at 4:39 in the morning. We will have live coverage here on WMMB of that final scheduled night launch. With the Super Bowl crowd in Miami, I'm guessing there's a good chance that if it's clear along the coast, they'll be able to see it from there, obviously. And I'm wondering whether or not some of them might even venture up to the Space Coast, and we could have a fairly large crowd parked around Brevard County for this one. I hope that happens. Later in Miami, you'll want to pay extra special attention at the beginning of the Super Bowl to the coin toss, because as we mentioned on Space Talk, that coin flew on Atlantis last November, courtesy of astronaut Leland Melvin, who, by the way, will be our guest on Space Talk next week. We'll talk to astronaut Melvin about his experiences in the NFL and how he wound up on the space shuttle, and we'll also talk about how the Highland Mint here in Melbourne was responsible for that coin flying in space and being used for the Super Bowl coin toss. So it should be a great show next week. We'll also talk about NFL technology used in the space program. Or space technology using the NFL program, we should say. All of that coming to you next Saturday at 2 p.m. on Space Talk. Well, Space Talk brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Bankey, and you're listening to WMMB.